Hello, and welcome to another episode of Critical Q&A, the show where I answer your questions that you've left for me in the comments section of my Q&A videos. I scour those and pull out your questions and take them up and answer them as rapidly and thoroughly as I can. And I really love the fact that you guys are as interested as you are in various topics that we're talking about. Of course, still a lot of Scientology questions in there. And this week I'll be Scientology Answer Man. And taking that up. But hey, I wanted to mention first, you know, if you're not subscribed to my channel, you definitely should do so, because there's otherwise you're missing out on a lot of good critical thinking and commentary and you know, very rational discourse going on here, and I'm hoping that it's getting out there and helping. And also another note that I wanted to throw out there this week is that tomorrow I am traveling to Toronto. I just got this freshly minted passport, and I'll be speaking at the Getting Clear conference, which is happening at Toronto. It's being put on by John A. Tack, the author of A Piece of Blue Sky, one of the most famous books about Scientology that has ever, you know, that's ever been written. Certainly one of the better ones. And also Professor James Beverly, who is a professor at the University of Toronto. They have collaborated and are putting on what is turning out to be the most extensive and well-attended by critics and by intellectuals and academics, one of the best conferences about Scientology and Scientology criticism that has ever been put on. It's a five-day conference up there in Toronto, and I am very excited to be going and honored to be part of this. So I will be taking my video camera with me and trying to see about doing some vlogging and some behind-the-scenes interviews while I'm up there, and I think it's going to be great. The conference itself is apparently going to be professionally videoed and uploaded in such a way that people have access to it. I'm not sure all the details on that, but as we find out, I'll get that information out there, and I'm really thinking that this conference is going to be something really special, and certainly going to be a lot of speakers saying a lot of good content up there. So anyway, that's something to look forward to this week. So now let's get on to your questions. Here we go. Buster 12. Do you think most staff members are there to truly help a person spiritually, or is it more about the stats and how much money or sales they can make? I always wrestle with that question and would like to think they are there to help. I've heard other people say they don't care at all about people in general, and it's all about the money. Every staff member and Sea Org member I ever met joined up in order to help. They had an honest desire to assist their fellow man, and in fact, that's the number one button that's pushed with people in order to get them to join, is they're doing so because they think that by joining staff or joining the Sea Org, they're going to be doing more to help more people than any other thing that they could possibly be doing in the world. The high-pressure sales tactics, the high-pressure recruitment tactics, and the obsession with statistics, the stats, which is really just a number on a wall, on a graph, all of that comes after the fact of joining staff or joining the Sea Org. And that's the culture of a staff member that's not generally recognized when people join staff, or they don't know about all that. Or if they do, they think that's, you know, something that goes on, but the real main thing is helping people. And what they don't get is that really it's all about those high-pressure sales tactics and statistics, because all Scientology really cares about is making money, and that's all that it really is about. So that effort and desire to help is used and twisted to generate income, and then they go along with that, and that's why you see staff acting in some of the most insane, you know, imbecilic ways possible, is because that's you know, a twisting of their purpose, and they're being taken advantage of. Active Dreamer. I was in Scientology a long time ago and only recently realized it was a cult. I don't remember much about the thought control that apparently went on. I just remember reading a lot. You've talked, perhaps to many others, Do you know of a book that would be good to read or a person I might talk to just to ferret out any effects it has had on my thinking? I'm fine, just thought I should do it. The number one book that I would recommend to anybody coming out of Scientology is the first one I read on the subject of science, reason, and critical thinking, which is Carl Sagan's A Demon-Haunted World. That book is pure genius from one end to the other, and it really helped clear up a lot of my thinking. I've listed on one of my other videos a whole array of resources, lecturers, speakers, and books and materials on the subject of coming out of a cult. That's on my Recovering from Scientology video. And I'll post a link to that in the notes section of this video so that you can see that and have access to that. That's the best list I can put together for you. Martin Keller. I was never in, but have taken a huge interest in seeing the Church of Scientology go down, and you are doing a great job in helping that happen. My question is, did you start doing this, or do you still do it, primarily to help others get out and stop people from taking those first tentative steps to get in? Or do you think it's as much for your recovery, if that's the right word? In other words, reconciling the who you are now with the guy who was in for so many years. When I was first making videos for YouTube, I was doing them for both of the reasons you say here. I was just as much for my own recovery and catharsis as it was to try to prevent people from getting into Scientology or convince those who are in to get the hell out. And using as, you know, as factual information as I could to make a case as to why they should not be part of it. Now that, pretty much ever since I made that Recovering from Scientology video, the recovery process for me is not my primary motivation for doing what I'm doing. And you can see that I'm now branching out into other topics than just talking about Scientology all the time. I feel very much that I've left Scientology behind me now, and it's not ruling my life. It's not something that rules my thinking. I don't have nightmares about it anymore. And I'm very glad to have moved on from that. So I'm not doing videos now for my own catharsis. I'm still talking about the subject because I want people to know about it. I want them to know how dangerous it is. And I want to help as many people as I can with, in any way that I can, really, through my video channel. And I think the best way for me to do that is to talk about science, critical thinking, rationality, and skepticism. So, MDSM 2005. Why don't all you ex-Scientologists get together and create an organization to meet the needs that all drove you to it in the first place? It could also be a place to which current members could escape. It would be a skeptical organization, an intellectually honest organization, an open organization that would embrace the scientific method of gaining knowledge. Well, two things that come off the top of my head on this is, one, it would be expensive to do something like that, and I don't know that the resources are available to set up specifically an ex-Scientology intellectual group or research group or something like that. I don't think that there's general interest in doing that. You know, a lot of people who leave Scientology just want to get over it and move on with their life and leave Scientology behind them. I know I certainly do, and I think I'm joined in that sentiment by a lot of other ex-Scientologists, which is not to say that I'm not sitting here talking about Scientology or trying to help people, but as far as the idea of forming up some organization about it, not so interested. Now, that's just me, and maybe other people have other ideas, but that's point number one. Point number two is that any such organization would be instantly and immediately attacked by Scientology, and the full resources of the Church of Scientology would go to destroying such an organization. And the resources Scientology has to muster are legion. They have a lot of money. An example of this would be the Lisa McPherson Trust, which you can Google or check out. This was an organization that was started by Bob Minton, who was a millionaire. He had a lot of money. And he put it into trying to take down Scientology through the Lisa McPherson Trust. I wasn't part of that. I don't pretend to know all about it. But I do know that that organization, that group, which was in Clearwater, right in the heart, you know, the belly of the beast, was successfully taken down by Scientology, as far as I know. And they also, you know, another example would be the Cult Awareness Network. That was a group of people that that were, you know, very much working to expose cults of all natures and all levels. And that group ended up being taken over by the Church of Scientology, who then used it to forward their own agenda. I'm not interested in doing that. I'm not interested in playing that game. I just don't think that's necessary. So that's why you don't see that kind of organization forming up. Jesus Christ. I have a tough question for you. When you were in the Sea Org, did you engage in the atrocious behavior that you now attribute to the entirety of the Sea Org? Just wanted to know if this organization had a negative effect on your own personal morality. I wonder if most people who are otherwise decent people would sink to levels of depravity and cruelty like we have heard about in the SO. Thanks, Chris. You rock. I was in Scientology for 27 years and in the Sea Org for 17 of those years. And I certainly did things that I am not going to be or could not claim to be proud of. I tried to get people to pay exorbitant amounts of money. I recruited people into the Sea Org. I certainly did my fair share of yelling and screaming. I never beat on anybody and I never assaulted anyone. But I certainly did some fist pounding and, did my share of psychological manipulation and engaging in appealing to people's emotions and playing on their heartstrings and whatnot in order to manipulate them for what I thought at the time was the greatest good for the greatest number, which was forwarding the mission of Scientology. I had no idea that I was doing anything other than trying to help mankind and help that individual. You know, when you believe that what you're doing is helping them, sometimes, you know, there's a thing called tough love where you gotta, you know, talk tough or be tough or drag them through something that they might not find pleasant or fun to experience, but you do it because you think you're helping them. And that's kind of what goes on. That's sort of the mindset in the vast majority of the minds of Scientologists when they're doing what they're doing, when they're yelling and screaming, and when they are, taking money from people or trying to get them to mortgage their house again or use their kids' college funds to pay for their next services and things like that, or to buy a new building for the ideal orgs. All of that's motivated primarily by their fanatical desire to try to improve the world. And that's just where it comes from. There are people in Scientology who certainly are aware of the fact that Scientology is not on the up and up and that it doesn't have everybody's best interests at heart. I think those people are, like I've said before, the people at OSA, the people who engage in the illegal actions, the really dirty tricks, the ruthless fair gaming, the stalking. You know, there's a point where you know you've crossed the line, and I did not engage in those kind of actions while I was in personally. I have reached out to those who I knew I harmed, who I could reach out to, who are no longer in the church, and I've apologized for actions I took that were degrading or demeaning to them. And and I was very happy to have success with that, to achieve a level of closure for them and for me. And I'm perfectly willing to do that again with anybody else who I might have harmed or demeaned in some way. I didn't get down and dirty like I've talked about some things that have been done. But, you know, it was not something that I look at as a wholly positive and wonderful experience in my life. It's something I learned a lot from, and it happened. I don't regret any of it necessarily, but I'm not always proud of everything that I did as a Scientologist. And now I've moved on from that, and I hope to not fall into anything like that again, and to have, you know, very positive effects with what I am doing with the rest of my life. Renewed Calm. With whom does the guilt blame for Scientology lie? LRH? Miscavige? Is it to be apportioned among all the members of Scientology somehow? Does it lie with Scientology itself as something somehow distinct from actual people? Is there no guilt involved anywhere? For me, the dividing line between victim and victimizer is the point of knowing what you're doing. and being aware of that fact. And I think that L. Ron Hubbard and I think David Miscavige are fully aware of the fact that they were conning people, are cheating people, are lying to people. And I think that any level of blame or guilt that needs to be apportioned out to them for that is deserved because they are knowingly doing that. I think that the same principle applies to those who are still in Scientology. And, you know, I've mentioned, you know, those in OSA, for example, who I believe, you know, the ones who carry out the dirty tricks and the harassment and the stalking and that sort of thing. I think they know what they're doing, and I think they know it's wrong, and I think they do it anyway. I think that there's guilt there to be assigned. I think there's some blame to be assigned there. I don't hold them harmless for their actions. I think that if you, you know, it's a little hard to draw a line with everybody in the sand and go, well, you know, beyond this point, you know, you are, you know, a bad person or something. I mean, it's a little hard to do that in the real world. You know, there's always shades of gray and there are always extenuating circumstances. So I think you have to take it on an individual level. I don't personally hold Scientologists all to blame for what Scientology is or what it does. I think that they are in the vast majority of them, I think, are you know, victims of a con. They are being conned, and I think that they fell for it. And I think that the moment that it starts tweaking in their head that maybe something's not right about this, you know, and they kind of shut their eyes to it, you know, the harder they have to shut their eyes, the more they're seeing that's wrong. I think there's a level there where, you know, you can start looking at that and going, dude, really? You know? So that's how I think that principle works out.
David Maltese. Atheists don't think or say there is no God. That's an anti-theist. Atheists think there is not enough proof for them to believe in a God. So you're actually an atheist, but you don't know what it is, so you claimed not to be one, and to be an anti-theist agnostic. Agnostic just means the research of knowledge. You can be a theist or atheist and be also agnostic. It really doesn't mean much. I don't see how being atheist, meaning not having a religious belief, is a religious belief. Please explain. Or did you not get the fact that being atheist doesn't mean you don't believe in God? It means that you fail to see proof of it. But of course, atheists all have their own beliefs on God, and that's a different thing altogether.
This is why I hate labels, because they try to narrow these things down, and you end up arguing over things that really aren't clear. As a critical thinker, it's important to look at all sides of an issue. That's for sure. And that's what I try to do. I look at myself as a moderate. I look at myself as somebody who goes and looks at all sides of something. And the best position, the best label I could come up with for myself in that moderate position was agnostic, meaning I don't know. I don't know about God or gods. I don't think that such things are knowable. I don't think in our present condition and with our ability and perception and understanding that we're in a place where we're gonna know one way or the other whether God does or gods do or don't exist. And I think that there is some intellectual dishonesty going on in making a claim one way or the other that God definitely exists or that God definitely doesn't exist. As to atheism, I have a very hard time with atheism the more I find out about it, not because I have a problem with atheists. I have a lot of friends who are atheists, and I love them to death. And every time I've sat and talked to them about it, they get to the point, you know, you get to a point where they go, well, we really don't know. We don't know if there's a God or gods. They don't talk about, though, and this is the thing about atheism, is the discussion is not, I have a lack of belief. The discussion is, those believers over there are idiots. Those believers over there don't know what they're talking about. Or organized religion as a whole has, historically speaking, been a force for more bad than it has for good. Now, I happen to agree with that position. I don't think that makes me an atheist because I don't have a position in regards to whether there is or isn't a God because I don't know. But I do believe that organized religion as a whole has not been a more of a force for good than it has been a force for bad. So I tend to have a lot of atheist friends because we have very common ground on that point of view. I have a hard time with atheism because, you know, in preparation for this question, I don't normally go looking things up, but this kind of keeps coming up. And I went to the American Atheist website where they try to define atheism as a lack of belief or a lack of proof in something. And I don't think that that's a very intellectually honest position. The reason why is because there is a scale of belief. From full belief to no belief. You have a position in there somewhere. There's gods, there are no gods, right? You can't know. There's a very big difference between believing something and knowing something, between belief and fact. And none of us are in a position to know with certainty anything about God or gods. We just aren't. So if you can prove to me with some conclusive evidence, not just me, if you can present a proof that there is or isn't a God, great. Then we can get into a position where we can establish facts about it. But we're not in that place right now, as far as I know, and I don't know that we're going to be anytime in the immediate future. So we take a position of belief. We believe there isn't, we believe there is. Or we're somewhere in the middle, where we're not really sure. We act on those beliefs. We act on those. We make decisions based on that. We make value judgments based on that, and those value judgments carry us on through life. And so we all have our own philosophy and our own viewpoints about these things. I have a problem with taking some labels and putting it on that because these are shades of gray. These are things that are mutable. They move, they change, they shift. And you try to corner somebody down and say, you're an atheist. No, you're an atheist agnostic. No, you're a theist agnostic. I mean, it just drives me nuts. So that's why I don't like the labels. It's not my intention in talking about this to try to offend anybody or their sensibilities about what they are or aren't or what they feel they are or aren't. If you want to have a label on yourself and call yourself something, I don't really have a problem with it. It tends to come in my direction because I'm being told now, you're this or you're that. And I've tried to make it clear that I'm not any of those things. I just am what I am. And I think that if we could move in a direction of tolerance for belief or lack of belief or whatever you want to call it, that the world would actually become a much better place. I think that the thing that I'm intolerant of is intolerance. And I happen to be friends with a lot of atheists, and I happen to become involved with, you know, atheism because it's kind of aligned with skepticism and humanism and rational thinking, but that doesn't mean atheists have all the rational thinking going on, because, you know, one of the best, but one of the better arguments that I saw regarding this was on a Christian apologetic site, which discusses lack of belief as a position, as an intellectual position, as a motivation. And I found the argument to be a good one. And I'll post a link to it down in the notes section below so you guys can check it out. And I'll also post a link to the American Atheist site so you can check what they say about what atheism is. They flat out say that the dictionary definition of atheism is wrong and that it sort of defies definition, or it's only defined as a lack of belief. Anyway, I think they're kind of trying to have their cake and eat it too, and I don't fully agree with that position. And that's where I'm at on it. Okay, and with that, I am going to bring this edition of Critical Q&A to a close. If you have any questions or comments for me, you can leave them in the comments section of this video. You can also email me at the email address, askchrisshelton atgmail.com, and I will take those, I will add those questions to the list of questions I'm taking up here on this site. I'm having a real ball doing this, and I hope you are having a good time with some of the answers I'm giving, and let's see if we can't all learn something more every day as a result of this. So thank you very much for watching.